It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah! We are not afraid here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com here in Phoenix, Arizona. But there's a lot to be afeared of if you didn't know what was going on. You know, knowledge and truth, I tell you, you know, that just takes away a lot of the fear. It's like, a match in a dark room. I don't know what's in here. Let's do a match. Boom. You go, okay, I see scumbag over there, scum over there, liar over here, untruth teller there, corporate media, give me, but, you know, when you got a little bit of truth, all of a sudden, understanding takes away a lot of the fear. And I tell you, one of the people that's very effective at making sure that the truth gets spread amongst an entire generation that before, I wouldn't say they didn't have any interest. They just had no outlet. You know, everybody's just trying to BS them into activity, you know, use their youthful energy to do whatever they wanted them to do. And the young people just go, you know what? I so see through the transparent lies. I'm just, oh, heck no. Oh, and by the way, you want me and my friends to go fight all these wars for you? You want to, you know, call the herd, us go dying for empire? Is that what you want? By the way, you're going to enslave us? We're going to be working how many months? Half of the year to fund all this stuff, you know, for other generations? Grandchildren, their children, my grandchildren, and indebted for, I don't know how long, let me think, ever, okay, to fund all this stuff. Somebody, something has to break. It's already started. Allison Gibbs is a fundraiser and outreach director from Atlanta, Georgia. She's worked on a lot of different groups. I mean, you know, Campaign for Liberty. She's, you know, how do you get a gig getting paid for Campaign for Liberty? You got to have some skills, I tell you. Well, I guess Allison's got some skills. She's working with Kokesh for Congress. You know, she's executive director of Ladies of Liberty Alliance. I mean, I've gotten to cross paths with Allison quite a bit and know her to be an excellent example of what I want to discuss today. I got you there, Allison.
Yep, I'm right here.
Allison, tell me, I know you women, you go get all freaked out about how, you know, old you are and all that kind of stuff. But I think it's important for people to understand what generation you come from, who you represent. So give me an idea, you know, of the kind of people that you deal with and from what perspective you have and your experiences that got you involved in politics.
Okay, well, I'm 27 myself, so I kind of came through 9/11 hit when I was actually started college. So I came from the pretty much like the class of kids that had just turned 18, had just graduated, and when 9/11 hit, pretty much went overseas to fight this illegal war or occupation, rather. And so I was pretty much with the group of young people that joined forces and became the new anti-war movement, and that's pretty much where I surfaced. And then
let me ask you this question. This is the one thing that's of interest to me. When you come in with an anti-war bent, you know, to your philosophy, you come in. I mean, at that time, I'll tell you, unless you were, you know, libertarian, you're coming in from the left. I mean, you know, there was a lot of Republican anti-war, was there?
I don't think so. I definitely came from the far left, socialist far left. So I came from a little different perspective than most, I think, to the liberty philosophy. But there's a lot of us from the left that are now part of the movement. And it's kind of nice to see that change happening.
Oh, no. I've been a couple of years on Air America. I was their token libertarian on Air America. I mean, you know, I get it. I talk to the left all the time. And the one thing that I found out, a lot of people on the right, you know, the audience here, I would imagine affiliates in several states that we're in, they are probably more from a right perspective. And they kind of get an idea what this libertarian thing is. But to think that there would people from the left would come to the freedom movement, they're like, how the heck would that happen? And I'll tell you, my perspective was this. People on the left, when they're going on about Dennis Kucinich, and a lot of times they didn't have a lot of love for Obama at the time either, or Hillary, and they were more Dennis Kucinich type, the real progressives. And I'm going, you know, why? And the reason was is because they genuinely had a desire to do good by people. They were just of the opinion they needed government to do it. And once they start to realize how nasty and evil the government and inefficient and corrupt it is, all of a sudden they start going, you know, maybe we can try this freedom thing, you know? So tell me, what was your path?
It was pretty similar to that. I never saw taxation or theft, but I did a lot of work with charities and I did AIDS research for a number of years. So coming from that science background, all we want to do is help people, and we want to see people improve. And pretty much all of the science realm is dictated to by the government, because they get grants from the government to research infection and diseases and things like that. So it was just inherent in me that the government, you know, obviously will take care of, you know, what we need. And we need those programs to help people. But then I started awakening the idea of charity and realized that if I wasn't being taxed so much, I would have a lot more free time. So I could work, let's say, 6 hours a day for the pay that I'm getting now if I wasn't taxed. And then that would open up a lot of time for me to be able to start a charity or be, ingrained in my environment and my community and help them. So I kind of awoken to those ideas and realized that, you know, especially with the war, you know, the government shouldn't be over there fighting, and why are we wasting all this money? And then the economic part started opening up to me, and from there, pretty much, like, I realized that taxation is theft, and the government is inherently evil, and, you know, things like that.
Well, you know, I mean, things like that. It's pretty big things, you know. And how did you come in to the Dr. Paul's effort? I mean, for you to be, you have a title, or at least did. Are you still with the Campaign for Liberty?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Well, what is your title there?
I'm the director of outreach.
And that's a new paying gig, right?
Yeah.
So how the heck does that happen? You have someone, you know, from the left, you're in your 20s, you're a scientist, you're working on government grants, you're doing all kinds of research, you just kind of get an epiphany in the head, I'm out of here, and all of a sudden you get a paying gig with Ron Paul's organization. How did you even come to their attention that they would even offer that?
Well, I was back in Charleston in 2007, 2008, and South Carolina was pretty much like the third big state for the primary, and so I pretty much started volunteering at the Ron Paul headquarters, and because I was pretty amazed that there was someone speaking an anti-war message, but actually, like, because I always considered myself like a fiscal conservative, a social liberal, so that was pretty much like the culmination of everything that I had thought or I had realized. And so I started helping out at the HQ in Charleston, and then got a paying gig there as the office manager for Charleston, and kind of organized the bottom half of South Carolina. And then when Campaign for Liberty started, I had made enough connections there that they saw the skills that I had, and I quit my DOD job and went up there.
Very cool. Well, how successful has that been? I mean, are you seeing that the young are still inspired by Dr. Paul's message? Are they still involved? Are they, a Campaign for Liberty, an effective tool?
I think so. You know, there's different, I think it's a slippery slope to anarchism personally, but that's kind of where I'm slipping to. But I think the C4L definitely is effective, and I think that, especially Dr. Paul, I mean, like, people are just kind of amazed with Lola, Ladies Liberty Alliance, like, how many young women there are in the movement now. And it's all because of Dr. Paul. Every single, woman that I know, minus a few, like Angela Keaton and such, have said, you know, I came in through Dr. Paul. So, I mean, it's obviously an effective tool, and I think that he is speaking to, our generation as well as the younger ones coming up. So, it's great.
Well, tell us about that. Lola, yeah, you know, we're kind of short on this segment, but I want you to tell me about Lola, how that came about. I was in Las Vegas at Freedom Fest when you guys came up with that, and you got all these beautiful women going, you know what? There's like women in this movement now. We need to do a calendar.
So
tell us about that and what happened.
I thought I was trying to think of a niche that needs to be met, and obviously women are a rare breed in the liberty movement. Well, they were. And we just decided to kind of unite, and we kind of used our skills, and I tried to find as many different women that were headlining and kind of showcasing leadership skills. And we combined and did the calendar just to kind of represent the different parts of the movement respectively. And from there, it's just blossomed. I mean, we have Lola chapters all over the country now, and it's just blown up.
And no, it's doing great. In fact, there are so many women, it's more than 12 months. You can get a long calendar. So, yeah, I have one left. We had at the 420 event, all the ones that I had left, that we got the Freedom Summit from y'all. We distributed them to ASU students. So you're all over the walls, plastered at Arizona State University, along with Jordan Page CDs. That worked out well, too. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with Allison Gibbs and Ernest Hancock in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
As I'm getting older, your people get colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive till love is found. And ask yourself,
where is the love? Where is the love?
Oh, it's right here. Here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, and Allison Gibbs. We're declaring the love for everyone. Yeah, even the bad guys. We love them too. Just maybe not as enthusiastically. Well, one thing that we want to do is I want to make sure that Allison's able to tell her story. You know, one thing, Allison, you came from a scientific background. What was it that you did?
I did AIDS research for about 6 years, and then I worked for the DOD for about 3.
DOD, Department of Defense, doing what?
Well, I have a secret clearance, but it was pretty much like antibiotic-resistant bacteria and bugs and parasites and stuff, fun stuff.
Time to get out. one thing that reminded me when you were saying this, a lot of people make a big deal out of the military-industrial complex portion of Eisenhower's farewell speech in 61. And that was, kind of a given. I'm like, yeah, I guess a lot of people needed to hear that, certainly at the time, and it applies now. But there was, right after he said that, there was another point that he was making. I want to read that, because this really emphasizes where the young, brilliant minds such as yours are taken to. They're not allowed to go out in the industry. I mean, this is we've really created such an environment that is all about grant funding from the government. And this is Eisenhower, what he was talking about. And he goes, akin to, and this is right after he said, beware military-industrial complex. He goes, akin to and largely responsible for the sweeping changes in our industrial-military posture has been the technological revolution during recent decades. In this revolution, research has become central. It also becomes more formalized, complex, and costly. A steadily increasing share is conducted for, by, and, or at the direction of the federal government. Today, the solitary inventor, tinkering in his shop, has been overshadowed by task forces of scientists in laboratories and testing fields. In the same fashion, the free university, historically the fountainhead of free ideas and scientific discovery, has experienced a revolution in the conduct of research. Partly because of the huge costs involved, a government contract becomes virtually a substitute for intellectual curiosity. For every old blackboard, there are now hundreds of new electronic computers. The prospect of domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, project allocations, and the power of money is ever present and is gravely to be regarded. Yet, in holding scientific research and discovery in respect as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific technological elite. Sound familiar?
Yeah, that's actually pretty accurate.
You know, so this is, you know, you're saying it's a task of a statesmanship to mold, to balance, and integrate these and other forces, new and old, within the principles of our democratic system, ever aiming toward the supreme goals of our free society. But my point is that can never happen, because once you create this power, the scientific technological elite, they're not going to give up power and be directed by the populace or be limited by a constitution. It's, you know, the military industrial complex. And then right after that, he's going, you know, that's kind of the distraction. He was like, well, of course, there's this military industrial complex thing, you know, but what's behind it? It's the scientific technological elite that is having we can bomb anybody within an hour from a missile from the new space plane. You know, I mean, this is what's happening right now. And I always thought of this speech whenever you and I talked and that you came from this kind of background. I'm going, yeah, that's what happened. They were able to capture the minds of someone like Allison Gibbs, bring them into the scientific technological elite and serve the man. And you escaped. And look what you're doing, man. They got to tighten up their net.
It's very tough to leave that as well, because it's very they're pushing it to the point where, you know, you're making good pay and they're telling you continuously that you're doing things for the betterment of man, and then when you start asking questions is when they don't like it. And that was the point where I realized what was going on, and I just had to get out of it.
What was your epiphany? I mean, what all of a sudden you just kind of go, you know, no, I keep your gazillion dollars. I'm good. I'm going to go do this freedom thing. How did that happen?
Well, we were doing some testing, and I was questioning some things, like information that we had to give to, like, the families of people that we were interacting with. And I was told that we didn't need to give the families that information regarding some, like, vet's health and stuff like that. And it was just to the point where it just didn't seem right to me, and I got a really bad feeling in my chest and was like, you know, maybe this really is, Maybe what RP is saying is completely accurate, and, you know, and then I started looking up funding, like scientists that get funding from anything other than the government, and you really can't find any. And I realized that it's pretty much like a indentured servitude.
This is exactly what President Eisenhower was saying. He was, look, you know, it's like a steadily increasing share is conducted for, by, or at the direction of the federal government, and it's intentional. You know, this is this prospect of domination of nations, scholars by the federal government, project allocations, and the power of money is ever present and gravely to be regarded. This is, you know, warnings from someone that was the supreme commander of the Allied invasion on D-Day. I mean, this is the boy that not only is he, you know, supreme military commander of the most powerful armada in the freaking history of the planet, he's also now president of the United States. And for him to say this, you know, he's like, hey, man, you know what? You think I was kidding? I just made this up, you know? And I understand. And for you to have extricated yourself from that system and had the intellectual and emotional and intuition to be able to know you're better off outside, regardless of how much money is available there, that there are other things of value, I applaud you. And I'm glad that you're here. And that's why I want to talk to you. But right now, what are you working on a lot right now? You're spending your time doing what?
I'm still doing C4L, but I am out in New Mexico, and I'm also assisting the Kokesh for Congress campaign, and we have some really, really great endeavors that we're going to take on in order to get Adam Kokesh elected for congressman.
You know, I want to talk about those. We're coming up on the end of the break, but I just put up on the top of Freedom's Phoenix an endorsement of the fundraising for Adam. Donna and I, we've been very open about our support of his message and him. We've been there to help some of the other activists, because I'm not really, you know, big on, you know, getting on the contribution list of or helping, you know, individual candidates. I don't do that. I want to go and help the people that want to help him. I want to inspire people to show their support and everything. But in this case, you know, I tell you what got me to putting this up. Adam is running for a congressional seat, the third district in New Mexico, northern part of New Mexico, like the top third. And what happened was, I'm like, good, you know, go get him. Go get him. He's in a primary and so on. And then this is what happens. He's running as a Republican. He's endorsed by Ron Paul. He's getting a lot of attention to the youth. He's raised a couple hundred thousand dollars. He's got some skills. Well, what happens is all of a sudden we have opposing him is the entire New Mexico Republican Party, and they got a night hosting Karl Rove. Spend the night with Karl Rove because we love Karl Rove, but we really don't like Adam Kokesh. And I'm going, I don't know. I would have paid him to invite Karl Rove to make that distinction very clear. I'm going, you guys are so nice to do that. But I'm like, wow, what kind of people would be hosting Karl Rove, especially in a Democratic Party-dominated state like New Mexico? Can you spend one more segment with me, Allison?
Yeah, sure.
Let's go ahead and do that, because there's a lot of things I want to talk to about this particular campaign, because there's so much going on, and our efforts are well-focused. We'll talk about it.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, everybody take a look, see what's what. Let me tell you, one of the guys that was helping do that, Adam Kokesh, you know, the Republican National Convention, while McCain is speaking, he's up there and he's got signs, man. He's just like, he's openly an Iraq veteran against the war. This is how I knew Adam. Introduced him when I was emceeing the Revolution March in Washington, D.C., and my wife was traveling with him, putting around signs while Gary Franchi and I were writing our skit that we were doing for that and so on, and she came back to the hotel room late, and she goes, you got to meet Adam. You got to hear the speech, man. So so we made dinner reservations with him for the next day. We go, and I read it, and I'm like, oh yeah, baby, I know what's going to happen here. And they were trying to cut him. You know, we were running tight on time, going in Dr. Paul's time, and that, and it was an effort. I mean, I just, you know, had to put my foot down, saying, nope, MC, yeah, he's getting up there doing his thing, and then just brought the house down. Here is an Iraq veteran, a Marine that was in Fallujah, and he's going, oh, no, you're sitting there doing this chicken hawk policy, you think from an armchair kind of, let me tell you what it's like on the ground, man, in the heat, in the dust, in the blood, in the muck. Let me tell you what it is. And I'm going, you know, this is a message that needs to be heard. And he's getting heard more and more and more and more, and then he runs for Congress. Heck, I was starting to call him congressman back then. I go, look, Adam, I know what's going to happen, man. You know how rare you are? You know, a young person like this had these experiences. It has your education. It has your opportunities. Has your ability to communicate. You know how rare that is? We need to get that. Oh, heck yeah. So I do whatever I can to make sure that he gets noticed. Came to the notice of Dr. Paul, too. Openly endorses him. Yep, enthusiastically endorsing Adam Kokesh. He's running as a Republican. And a party that's, headlining May 1st, Karl Rove. What does that tell you? It tells you they don't like Adam being there. I can guarantee you that. But, you know, there's, I was searching, Allison, I was looking for a graphic to put up for him just today. You know, I was writing some stuff, you know, for Adam's campaign. And I looked for a Google image, and it had Adam Kokesh exposed. He's a member of Iraq Veterans Against the War. Oh, my goodness. And I'm going, heck, I would have paid you to put that up, you know? So these guys, they really are another generation. Where is the opposition coming from for Adam's ability to just tell the message of freedom, I mean, and peace? I mean, who is it that is against that?
It's the establishment. They've been doing a lot of smear campaigns and attempting to keep him off the ballot, and the people have... The 3rd District of New Mexico have spoken. We received four times the amount of signatures that we needed in order to get on the ballot. And they're passing around things about him being anti-war and, you know, trying to say that he's not legitimate and all this kind of stuff. But the people are speaking, and it's just a small, minute group of establishment people that just are Karl Rove worshippers and are kind of stuck in their own, they're stuck in their own cave, I guess. I don't know what's going on with them.
When I saw the Karl Rove thing, you know, in preparation for the show today, and I saw that and I go, no, now's the time. I mean, if that isn't a perfect neon flashing light, I'm going, you know, yep. Everybody go give some money to Adam's campaign or his individual. Go do something. You know, I mean, this is, oh, and you guys got a thing, you know, I don't know. I call it the summer love. You know, tell me about your summer project you're working on.
Okay, it's called, we call it Summer in Santa Fe, which is Summer of Love because this place is absolutely beautiful. But what it is that we're trying to bring in 30 to 36 students from all over the country to come in and help us campaign. And in that, they'll learn how to campaign, and they'll also learn some fundraising skills and some outreach skills. And we're hoping that we can bring them in for about 2 weeks from May 15th to June 2nd. And we already have a good number. We have about 20 students that have already signed up. But in order to sponsor, we're asking people to sponsor the students, and it's $125 per student per week, so it's $250 for one student to be able to come, and that includes their lodging and their food and their materials and everything. And it's a really good venture. They get to meet Adam. We're going to take them hiking for a weekend and a lot of fun stuff that they might not be able to experience where they are right now.
No, I would imagine that would be worth intern credit. I mean, this is real politics. None of this, you know, go sit and do phone calls in some glass front store front and of a vacant retail outlet in downtown, blah, blah, blah. I mean, this is actual real politics. You want to go out and change, free some minds, freedom minds.
Exactly.
And learn something.
It's really great. And actually, I'm offering anybody that does come out and they fill like the 2 weeks and have a good time, I'll be happy to write them a recommendation to whatever they want. And I'm willing to look at their resumes and maybe try to get them more involved in the Liberty Movement after that and whatever I can do.
Yeah, no, you know, this is an effort for them to be able to learn some of the mechanisms by which you can really, really have an effect. But the problem is that so many times you'll have them encouraged to come in, and then all they are is just told what to do, as opposed to, you know, taking advantage of their energy to do what they want to do, which is support freedom. You know, I vote freedom, man. That's good. Now, let's talk about another effort. Tracy Harmon is one of your compatriots in LOLA, Ladies of Liberty Alliance, and we did what we could to kind of help her in going to Iraq, and we put up on Today's Archive some of the signs that she's holding up there, and I said, you know, I tell you what, I can help you, but you got to do some work. I mean, I want a picture in Iraq, refugee kids, M1 Abrams, Apache attack helicopter, something. Yeah, I want sent a bunch of different signs. Antiwar.com, Ladies of Liberty Alliance, 4409 got one, Freedom's Phoenix, Where is the Love logo, what was the other one? Iraq Veterans Against the War, the Revolution. I mean, I want to get picked. If you're going to be in Iraq, we're going to be in Iraq. So, but she has an interesting story she's been telling. My wife Donna put up some information there, but you probably know a lot more about what she's doing than we do, even by her writing. Tell us about her trip. What happened?
She's having a really good time there. I know she's scared out of her mind. Her knee is still acting up, unfortunately. She had an accident in Atlanta doing something for LOLA, and she's kind of hurt over there right now. But she went over there. She's there for she's going to be there for 2 weeks. She comes back this Thursday, and I'm really excited to see her because I'm a big fan of Tracy. She also works on the campaign as well. So, and she just went over there, and they've been going to some refugee camps and speaking with people that have been affected by the war. And they actually went into one of the places where Saddam gassed a group of people, and she's been to mass graves. And from what I'm seeing, she's making a big impact, and it's actually highly impacted her. And I know her and I actually have spoken about going back over there because she just feels like that's where she's supposed to be, and that's where her activism lies. And she's just doing an amazing job over there, and I really have to thank the coalition of people that raised the money for her, which was Freedom Phoenix, LOLA, Iraq That's Against the War, and antiwar.com. I mean, it's absolutely amazing us getting her over there and her what she's experiencing. She sends updates about, you know, probably every 3 days or so, just to let us know what she's doing. And we post that on LOLA and IAmLOLA.org and some other places post as well. So
yeah, it's nice
you can read up on her adventures.
it's nice to know that she's alive. I mean, you know, this is, you know, this is, it's not peaches and cream. I mean, this is not safe. She's a beautiful young woman, and be over in that, you know, be such a Caucasian in another culture like that during occupation and war. I mean, that's, you're rolling some dice there, you know. But, I mean, she's not a wimp. I mean, she's beautiful, but wasn't she a Marine?
She was in the Army, yeah.
Oh, she was in the Army. Okay, she went through boot camp. I mean, you know, if I got to, I could, defend myself a little bit. But I tell you, you know, she's a young woman that's thin and attractive, and she's not going to be taking down no 300-pound guy. You know, I don't care, you know, how much training she has. She is vulnerable over there, and you know, our prayers go with her. But I'm telling you, the one thing that I want to make sure that people understand is that she is compelled to do this. And a lot of people are. And when you get over there and you see how war meets the road, I mean, when the rubber meets the road, you got people that are affected by this stuff, the people that are damaged, the people that are suffering, the people that need help, the people that need a voice. And you go over there and you see that you can have a voice for them. You start to realize the network that has been created by just young people getting involved and knowing other young people. And with Google Translator, I mean, heck, just to be able to type to Twitter, to do Facebook and hit the translate button in Arabic, and these people become friends, and you go and we're not at war with you. We're not at war with you. Our government is, and they are. Our government is so far removed from the people now that it's so obvious what's going on. And I need to understand what you see in the future from your perspective, Alice. I mean, you're at many powerful levels in this freedom movement, and I want you to, you're going to do it when we come back. When we come back, I want you to explain to the audience what you see as the future, not just with Adam Kokesh's campaign, not just with your campaign for liberty, not just with, you know, the freedom movement and Lola and all this other stuff. I want to know what you see as the future for when you start having a family. I mean, that's what got me motivated when I was your age. We'll be right back and declare your independence just a little bit.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Ernest Hancock, another independence declaring kind of individual, Allison Gibbs. How about truth, justice, and what used to be the American way, whatever the heck that was. It used to be this kind of a, you know, freedom thing, and I vote that. You know, freedom good, government not so good. So we're looking at a future that is going to be filled with what? I mean, the young people that you represent. And tell me about that. I mean, is it a lot of the young people, what you work with a lot, or do you have a wider diversification of people you associate with? Who you spend most of your time with?
Yeah, it's pretty diverse. A lot of students, a lot of younger people, a lot of 20-year-olds. Really, the beauty of Campaign for Liberty and some other groups is that it's so diverse. There's all different ages. And it's really nice to be able to kind of learn how to mingle and mix with different age groups and different types of people and things like that. So it's pretty diverse.
Well, you know, tell me who gets most of the work done.
The younger people, I would say. I think the older people are just now. I mean, I think that what's happened is a lot of the older people are just now waking up as well. A lot of times it's because of their children or younger people kind of awakening them to the ideas of liberty. But I definitely see a trend. There's a lot more younger people in the movement, and I think that as we all age and grow, and we're kind of coming to different terms as to what we think the liberty movement should be, and I think the liberty movement is evolving as well because of the varying age groups and the fact that the youth is very, very big.
Explain that to me. I got my own opinions. I mean, I'm going around the country all over the place talking to people, and I'll tell you, you know, the liberty movement, certainly inside even the Libertarian Party, they are, you know, I give you this. There's, because of Barr's nomination in 08, there has been this big influx of, you know, angry Republicans that just want to be I don't know, more popular Republicans or something. They hate the hypocrisy, but they're not willing to embrace the reason they're so hypocritical. This function of the state is to defend individual rights, and that's it. But they want them to do whatever it is that they want them to do. So I can understand that there's an argument inside the liberty movement of what the liberty movement should be focused on. What do you think the issues are?
I mean, you know, at first, whenever I got into the movement, it was a lot of anger. It was a lot of frustration. You know, are we ever going to be able to achieve this? And kind of the luster wore off because I was just, you know, you're continually fighting, and it seems like it's a never-ending battle. But something that I've come to terms with that I think will be vital for the liberty movement to succeed is to be more positive. I think that, for instance, instead of being, you know, outwardly anti-war, let's be pro-peace. You know, let's flip the script and kind of be a little bit more positive in things of like audit the Fed and in the Fed. Those are very positive kind of ideas. And we have the competing currencies building up with AOCS and a few other groups like Del Valle Silver and stuff like that. So it seems that like we're finding niches in just society in general, and we're starting to plug into those. We're becoming more mainstream, if that makes sense. And we're doing it because we're being positive. And I think that's vital for this movement to succeed.
You know, this is one thing I found interesting. You know, they did the Southern Poverty Law Center special, the director of special projects, Heidi Byrick. I've had her on the show a few times. And, you know, of course, I make fun of her, you know, the kind of the stuff that they do and put out. And, you know, how come I can't get on the Patriot list? What the heck do I got to do kind of thing? And and she goes, well, we're not going to put you on her because we know you want to be, you know. So but she has listed Dr. Paul and Chuck Baldwin and Gary Franchi and Catherine Bleich. And it just goes on and on and on. And Sheriff Mack and Stuart Rhodes. And I'm going, you know, wow, based on what? And I tell you the reason why they're afraid to put me on is because I never advocate the violence. It's always the love. And if they have someone that, you know, ooh, can't have patriot, you know, patriots on the patriot list and advocate love, that would make us look bad. So, but they, I think they do understand the threat, the power to the threat to the power of the establishment by us doing exactly what you're talking about, emphasizing the positive, the good in each of us, and us just, you know, can we just if we ignore them enough, will they go away? I mean, is that a possible solution, kind of this agorism thing? You know, we're just going to extricate that your generation is finally just going to go do exactly what you did and said, you know what, having the big black BMW is not necessarily on top of my list. I mean, is that what it's going to take?
Yeah, I really do think so. And I think that what's going on is that we're kind of getting hit from both sides in this like negative kind of it's like negative energy they're putting out on us. And since we're not really reacting, all we're doing is trying to, you know, find the good in people and be positive. They're getting tired. I really think that's what's happening. And, you know, you always fight, you know, negativity with positivity. And just in that, they're going to get tired, and they're just going to, over time, people are going to awaken and say, you know what, I'm kind of tired of slinging mud. Like, I'd rather just be happy. And these people are happy. And why are they happy? And it'll start awakening minds that way. You're more likely to awaken people's minds by being in a positive state than being negative and trying to bash everybody around you.
You know, and that's a new realization that I think your generation is just coming. My daughter, my youngest daughter, she is 20 years old. She went to a Black Eyed Peas concert, and she heard the song, you know, Where Is the Love? And she just like, you know, Dad, you got it. You got to hear this. What you're talking. This is what you got to talk about.
Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity.
So you can see the lyrics of this. This is from 2002. You know, Where Is the Love? This whole movement behind this one individual. So I heard it a bunch of times. I just never paid much attention to the lyrics. But there's an entire generation that knew exactly what they're talking about. It's like, you know, we're being brainwashed by the media. We're being brainwashed by the news. We're being brainwashed by society. What happened to, I mean, where's the love? And when the Love Evolution came out, and it just, I just knew what was going to happen. And it's not going to stop. They can't put this genie back in the bottle. But I think that there may be something that they'll come up with trying to scare us into something. Are we afraid there's going to be some big giant something? I mean, you know, we got the economic bomb going to go. Is there going to be a bomb? Is there going to be a housing bomb? And what? I mean, you know, is it going to have an effect on your generation? They're going to go, oh, okay, I was thinking about the love there for a minute. I thought I found it, but, you know, no, we got to go kill the whatever people that did this or something. You think they're going to fall for it again?
I don't think that we will. And I think another factor is that they're trying to demean us and marginalize us by using names like terrorists and domestic terrorists and just being like these negative words. But the problem is that they've already kind of used these words to the point where they have no meaning. So they're not really they're trying to use scare tactics by, you know, using certain language in explaining people like us. And I think that they've used that language so much that the actual definition, like the word has absolutely no meaning, and it's actually backfiring on them.
We're on level orange! Again, I understand. But what is it you're advocating, though? I mean, aside from people coming and spending some quality time with you guys this summer for a couple of weeks, and aside from, you know, donating to Kokesh's effort and, you know, slapping Rove upside the head in northern New Mexico. I mean, aside from, you know, Ladies of Liberty, young women coming in and showing what they got to the movement, which is amazing, by the way, you know, because you're right. You know, there has been big complaint in the Liberty Movement. You know, we're all the women. And I go, yeah, well, where's all the love? You know, show some love instead of this, you know, patriot, you know, let's go get a gun thing. You know, just, you know, let's show some love and the women will show up and here they are. So you know, there's a lot of this, but, you know, what is it you would advocate a young person coming into awareness should do?
I mean, I really think it comes down to getting plugged in. You know, that's one of the big things that I personally advocate is trying to get people plugged into different areas where they feel most confident, not only just in the movement, but also outside the movement. Because if we're all, you know, and also I also am a big advocate of supporting liberty-minded businesses. If, you know, if there's somebody in the movement that owns a business, we need to start. I'm trying to actually get that off the ground right now, but like trying to find, you know, help people economically, like that's a big deal. And I think that that's one thing that we've overlooked in this movement is trying to help people, you know, further themselves and enrich their own lives through the skills that we each have individually. And if we start this, you know, another thing that the premise of Lola is like, we can teach people our skills that we already possess and learn skills from others so that we can be the best, most informed, citizens that we can be.
I mean, you know, things like got chickens. I mean, plant a garden, be able to raise some food, learn the difference between good and bad seeds, be able to just communicate, know how to weld. Can you lay brick? Do you know what which end of a hammer to hold? I mean, you know, just basic survival skills. And I think a lot of this, I've been very impressed with a lot of people coming to understand the importance of that. When I was at the Liberty Forum that the Free State Project does. And I was one of the speakers there, and there's a lot of young people that have came there as it starts to get a little warmer, winter's over. They're coming in and they want to learn skills to just survive whatever's coming because they feel it's coming. Allison, thanks for spending time with me today. I think we got a great perspective, and please come back and share with us all the news that's going on in the freedom movement from your generation. Would you please?